Okay, good evening, everyone. Tonight's learning is dedicated to L'ilui Nishmas Pinchas ben Shaya. Tonight we have the privilege of studying Parshas Nasa. Parshas Nasa is famous for being the largest parsha of all the Chamish Yichum Shei Torah. It's the biggest parsha. 176 psukim, the longest of all the parshas in the Chumash. But the truth is, it's not necessarily the hardest of the parsha, because at the end of the parsha, there is a lot of repetition. At the end of the parasha, the Torah goes easy on the Baal Kirei, and the Torah gives him basically a repetition of all the karbonos. It's basically the same thing said over and over and over, which hopefully we'll talk about its significance. But nonetheless, it is famous for being the largest of all the parashas. It's interesting, but Moshe Wolfson points this out, as do others, that in all the Masechtas in Shas, we know the longest Masechta, Bava Basra, it also has 176 blot. And all the Pirkei Tehillim, the longest Pirkei Tehillim also has 176 psukim. So there's something special about the number 176. He goes on to explain what its significance is, not for now, but in any case, just an interesting bit of information that this is the longest parsha that we have in the Chamish Yichum Shei Torah. What goes on in Parshas Nasa? Quite a few major events. So the beginning of the parsha, the Torah is going to tally, is going to count the Shevet Levi, the three children of Levi, which we'll talk about later this evening a little bit more in depth. That Levi had three children, Gershon, Kehath, and Merari. And then the Torah is going to count all of the three children. The Torah is going to divvy out the jobs for each one of the three children. And everyone's going to have a place and a purpose in their avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Then the next major chapter we come into, the next major issue. The next major issue we're going to come across in this week's parasha is the Torah has a commandment to remove tumah from the machne. We have a mitzvah of shiluach min ha-machne called tzruv v'chozov. Anyone who becomes tumah has to be sent out of the camp. The Jewish camps can't embody tumah, so the tumah has to be purged. Anyone whose tumah has to be removed, kicked out from the camp. Then we're going to have the idea again in this week's parasha of giving the proper gifts to the Kohanim and to whom you're supposed to give your donations to, as well as the idea of stealing from a ger. And then the two major chapters in this week's parasha that gets a lot of attention is the story of the Saita, the woman who's suspected of having illicit relationships, and her husband was keen of an istara. He warned her, and he told her, don't be alone with this man, and now she has to go for the water testing test, the water tasting test, to see if she was Taka Mizana or not. That's the major parasha. Then the subsequent parasha is the idea of a Nazir, that the Nazir is a person who decides that the only way he can serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly in this world is to prohibit on himself that is technically permitted. And we always have the back and forth question, again, we spoke about this in previous years, is Naziris the way to go, or is Naziris a B'diyevit? Is this the way of life that a person should just ask the things on himself and live in a life where he blocks out all the Tanuge Oilam Hazeh, and by doing so he becomes the best Eved Hashem possible? Or maybe you're supposed to use Tanuge Oilam Hazeh to make them Kaddish and serve Hashem in that way? So it's a very big question whether or not a Nazir is a Lechatchilo, or is a Nazir merely a B'diyevit? And then we come to the Parsha of Birchas Kohanim, the parasha where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the power of through the Kohanim to give us simple folk blessings. And again, for us in Chutz La'aretz, this means even more, because we don't get this every single day. In Eretz Yisrael, they get Birchas Kohanim every single day. So perhaps they take it for granted, the beautiful brachas that come out from the mouth of the Kohanim. But we in Chutz La'aretz, we have a tradition in Chutz La'aretz that we don't duchen every single day. Why exactly we don't duchen every day, and why we only have duchen yom tov is a whole conversation unto itself, but that has been the accepted practice amongst Ashkenazim Jewry, not Sephardic Jews. I happen to, my yeshiva is situated in a Sephardic shul, so very often I'm zeichet to hear duchening. Maybe I should push myself to go be part of the duchening, but Sephardim duchen every single day in Chutzlars. But Ashkenazim, based on a Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, we don't duchen every single day. We only have the privilege to duchen on Yom Tovim. So now we're going to have to wait. We were zeichet to have duchening 2 days, Baruch Hashem. Hopefully everyone got duchening in. So it's always a shame in Chutzlars, if you happen to be in a minyan where there's no duchening, so you think you're gaining, you know, you're finishing shul 10 minutes early, but you don't realize the disservice that you're not getting to hear, you're not getting a beautiful bracha from the Kohanim. And the brachas, as Rashi describes them, are not necessarily what we would have thought. We would have thought Birchas Kohanim would be some form of a spiritual bracha that we should learn for 20 hours a day, and we should down with Mokavona. No, Rashi learns it's a very physical bracha. We should have money, and we should be protected, and our money should stay. It's a very gashmi-based bracha. But in any case, that's another lesson that's learned in this week's parasha, the idea of Berachos Kehanim. So we in the Chutz La'aretz, we cherish it, because we only have it for so few times a year. And then the end of the parasha, really from Chamishi and onward, the Torah discusses what happened when the Mishkan was finally put up. What we call the Chanukah HaMishkan, the Mishkan was put up and ready for business, and the Nesiyim's Kabanas that they brought subsequent during that time, which we know took place on Aleph Nisan, when the Mishkan was put up, and all the 12 days that the Nesiyim brought their Kabanas, and that's really where a lot of the repetition is found in the end of Parashas Nasa. So that's basically some of the major topics of conversation in Parashas Nasa. Now, everything we mentioned can probably get its own shear, but we will try to get to as much as we can in this evening's time. So let's go back to the beginning. Always a good place to start. Let's start from the beginning. But the truth is, maybe, this year we'll do something different. Maybe this year we'll start from the end and work our way backwards. Maybe we'll start from the back and see if how much we cover backwards. I don't know. Maybe we'll go backwards and see if we can do the end of the parasha instead of the beginning of the parasha first. I don't know. I don't know if that will confuse people or make people happier. I'm not sure. So let's just quickly mention something on the end of the parasha. This way I know where we get to the end of the parasha, and then we can go back to the beginning of the parasha. The end of the parasha, the Torah describes the Chanukah HaMishkan. So right away, you have to look at the first pasuk. Again, if I'm confusing anyone by going out of order, I apologize. I won't do it in the future, or maybe just for this week. So we're looking over here in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. We're going backwards in the parasha, which is, again, a little bit confusing, but this is where we might actually get to some of the stuff at the end of the parasha. So if you look at the end of the parasha, the Torah tells us in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Vayihi was, B'yom Kalois Moshe L'Hakim Es HaMishkan, the day Moshe finished putting up the Mishkan. And this was the famous time when Moshe Rabbeinu finished putting up the Mishkan. So Rashi's bothered with the choice of Lashon of the Pasuk. It says, it was the day Moshe finished putting up the Mishkan. Why doesn't it just say that it was the day that Moshe put up the Mishkan? What do you mean Moshe finished putting up the Mishkan? The Torah should have said this was the day that Moshe put up the Mishkan. Why does it say this was the day Moshe finished putting up the Mishkan? So Rashi tells us, because there were 7 days of the Meluim, how you Moshe ma'amidu meforakai. Because you have to know, this was not the first time Moshe Rabbeinu put up and down the Mishkan. Moshe has been doing this for 7 days. But the first time he put it up and he left it, that was this day. That was what we know today as Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Because up till then, those days are called the Shivas Yemei Amaluim. Many shuls have a minute, they don't say Tachanun on those days. The end of Adar, because those are the days where Moshe Rabbeinu took the Mishkan and opened it and put it down. And finally, when did Moshe Rabbeinu finally finish with the Mishkan? He finally finished with the Mishkan on this day. He put the Mishkan up and it stayed up for good. So there's an important message over here that Moshe Rabbeinu opened it and put it down, is that sometimes in life, we don't get everything right the first time. It's not always right the first time. We mentioned the past, Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out that there's a Medrash. The Medrash tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made other worlds before he made this world. He made it, scratched it, made another one, scratched it, and then he gave us this world. So Rabbi Soloveitchik points out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make mistakes. We make a mistake, right? We're trying to work on something. We work on it. We say, that no good. So we trash it. We start again. Because Baruch Hu doesn't make mistakes. What does that mean? Hashem made a world, made a mistake, and did it again. So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that Hashem is teaching us, humans, that it's okay to make mistakes. And sometimes we will have mistakes. We will struggle. We will fall. But we need to get up again and start over again. So Moshe Rabbeinu's opening and every single day putting it up and taking it down was this idea. That we will have our ups and downs in our growth. We will have our rough days. We will have our difficult days. And we will have our days that it just doesn't go. But instead of giving up, instead of rolling over, we will just start again. We will do it all over again. I mentioned this in previous years, that there's so much discussion about that Parshas Midbar. By Midbar has to be read the Shabbos before Shavuos. Tosfos and Megillah already tells us that the practice is that we always read Parshas by Midbar right before Shavuos. So I always point out, if it's so important to read by Midbar before Shavuos, it must be as important to read Parshas Nasa after Shavuos. Which means so much Asayris that we get from Parshas Nasa must be intertwined to Shavuos as well. So as we go through the Parsha, I will point out, hopefully if I remember to point out, where we draw those distinctions. But if I don't, I want you to realize this on your own. Those of you that are listening, realize that there is much, much to learn and much to gain from the fact that this week's Parsha is always, almost always, to the extent that it's before Bar Mitzvah before Shavuos, Nasa is after Shavuos, which means there's many messages in this parasha that is for a takeaway from a post Shavuos experience, and I think this is one of them. Very often after Shavuos, we're very excited and we're very into learning, and then what? A few days later, it starts to wither away, and we get very depressed. We say to ourselves, "I don't understand. Last week, I stood and I said I want to be devoted to learning, and I want to learn more, and I want to go to more shurim, and I want to have more chavrusas." Then a week later, I'm back to where I was. So the answer is, it's okay. Get yourself back up and have a better day. Today will be a better day. Yesterday was a shvacha day. Today will be a better day. I was just talking to a Talmud of mine who was telling me that he hit a shtickel bump, a shtickel yirida in his learning. I said, fine, get yourself back up and let's start again. What was in the past was, and now we're moving on to a new beginning. So every day they started the same process again, hoping for a better outcome. Because when it comes to avodas Hashem, the trick is to continue trying. Even if you hit a bad patch, you had a rough patch, and things seem not to be going, learning seems to be slacking off, your avodas Hashem is slacking, don't worry, get back on the horse, keep on going. And that's one of the very important lessons that we need to take away from the idea of the Hakamas HaMishkan. But then is when things get very interesting. What happens over here is the Torah tells us, the Torah reminds us that when it was time to bring the karbanos, so each nasi brought a karbon, and the first nasi to bring a karbon was who? Was Nachshon Ben Aminadav. So he brings his karbon. Fine, very nice, very terrific. Now the next day, who's the next nasi? Is Nisano Ben Tzuar. Nisano Ben Tzuar is now presented with a massive moral dilemma. He says to himself, what do I do now? Do I try to up what my predecessor did? Do I try to bring a better, fancier, more expensive, more creative carbon than Nachshon brought? Or do I show the world that it's okay for us to all be the same? We don't have to outdo each other. I don't have to outshine anyone. And I don't have to set a new precedent where people are trying to outshine him. Says the Medrash. Rashi quotes it. Rashi does not quote it. But the famous Medrash, tells us that Nisano ben Tzuar made a conscious decision. He decided, I am going to bring the exact same carbon as Nachshon. I'm going to copy him. Instead of trying to outshine him, instead of trying to outdo him, I'm going to do just like him. I'm going to send a trend. The trend is, this is going to be the new standard that we work. We all in the scene, we're sending a trend for Klal Yisrael that you don't have to outdo people. And says the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so impressed with what Nisano did, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed this carbon to be brought on Shabbos. Normally we know an individual carbon is not allowed to be brought on Shabbos. The only carbon that is doicha Shabbos is what we call a carbon sibur. But says the Chafetz Chaim, the way he explains the Medrash, but Hashem was so happy with Nisano ben Tzuar's attitude. Nisano ben Tzuar said, no, I don't want to start trying to outdo Nachshon. I want to start a new precedent where we're all going to do the same thing. And Hashem said, I love that so much, I'm willing to allow it to be brought even on Shabbos. I think the pshat is that he made his carbon into a carbon sibur. Because Nisano ben Tzuar just took his own carbon and said, I'm giving it for the people. If it would be about me, I would try to outshine Nachshon. I would try to outbid the first guy. But it's not about me. My carbon is for Klal Yisrael. I am setting a precedent for Klal Yisrael that we don't need to outbid each other. We don't need to outshine each other. It's quite all right if we all have the exact same way of celebrating this amazing time in Jewish history. And this is a very, very important lesson that we, the Jewish people, grapple with every single day. We are always trying to outshine the other guy. One guy makes a chasana with a 10-piece band, I got to make a chasana with a 12-piece band. Right? One guy has thousands upon thousands of dollars worth of flowers, I got to outdo him for my chasana. And it's wrong, because it doesn't gain anything, it doesn't benefit anyone, and it ends up making a set of precedent and clash so that we just can't keep. And therefore, Nisano ben Tzuar was a gadol when he decided, when he had this moral dilemma too, do I try to outshine my predecessor, or am I going to try to set a tone, to set a standard for Klal Yisrael that everyone should follow? A friend of mine was telling me a story. He lives in a community in Muncie, where he has it's a young community, so most of the people in the community didn't really make simchas yet. Didn't make, I think, the bar mitzvah or offer, if I already forget. And there was one fellow who was up to make a simcha, and he was a fabulously wealthy fellow. And he bedavka decided to make it a very simple simcha, because he wanted to set a precedent that we don't need to make fancy simchas to be a good community. We don't need to try to have all off the... Again, the guy was financially stable. He could have. But we don't need to. We don't need to go all the way, all out, and waste a lot of money when we don't need to, because it sets a very negative precedent. Again, we don't need to. There's no need for it. And therefore, Nisana ben Tzur, but the Medrash tells us, you know why Nisana ben Tzur made this decision? Because he came from Shevet Yisachar. Shevet Yisachar is a Shevet of Loim De Torah. When a person learns Torah, he realizes that, what do I need to do this for? I need to outshine the guy, my neighbor. I got to build an extra floor in my house just for my house, the biggest house in the block. No, if you need the bedrooms, you have Kanaanah or a large family, okay, you got to build a big house. But I'm just going to build a bigger house just to outshine the guy next to me. For what? So Nisadal ben Suar, who came from Shevet Yisachar is Loim De Torah. The more a person learns Torah, he realizes, this is not going to make me happy. It's not going to make anyone happy. I'm just setting a very negative precedent in the community that this is the new standard. Chasnas look this way, mamisras look this way, and it doesn't do good for anyone. This, again, is a very touchy topic, because many people argue, Baruch Hashem, if they have the money, let them spend what they want. Okay? It's a discussion that needs to be had. But Nisadal ben Suar taught us that if you don't want to start getting into one of these types of battles, just keep it standard. We're all doing the same thing. We're all serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the same way. And the pshat is that we're all really trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to give Nachas Ruach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one of the greatest spreaders, Marbitzei Torah in America in the 20th century, was Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, founder of Torah Vadas. And he, Kaseder, used to give Talmidim away to other yeshivas that were up and coming. And he used to say, it's not my Talmidim, it's not my yeshiva. We're here to build Torah in America. So if I give you my Talmidim, you can build. It's not about personal. The moment you make it personal, it doesn't work. The moment you make it about your own success and your own status and you lost the idea. The idea is it's about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So you have to ask, when I'm making a simcha, is this going to make a Kodesh Baruch Hu happy or is this going to make me happy? Is this going to impress my neighbors? Or is this going to impress HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the Nisadal ben Suar said, I want to do something that's not going to impress my neighbors. It's not going to get me a lot of hits on Instagram. It's going to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu happy. And that's really the tool we should be using when it comes to Avodas Hashem. Will this make Hashem happy? Will this bring Nachas Ruach to Hashem? If the answer is no, then it's probably a bad idea. And therefore, he set this beautiful precedent, and therefore each one of the Nisim followed suit, and they had the exact same carbon. So although you read the parsha, it seems extremely repetitious, it seems somewhat boring, but the Mefarshim also point out, but there's another very important lesson over here. The lesson is that each Nasi, when he made his decision and he brought his carbon, although it looks exactly like the other guy, but it had his own individuality touch to it. Meaning, very often people say, well, if we're all going to look the same, we're all going to dress the same, and we're all going to make the same kiddush, where's my individuality? The answer is the individuality lies in you. How you feel. You can look like the same guy, but when you walk down the street, if you feel like you're serving Hashem, you feel excited about it, so even though you guys look the same, it's a different experience. So each Nasi, although he brought the exact same carbon as the Nasi before him and the Nasi after him, but he had his individuality to it, because you know what? In his heart, he had a feeling of lishma, of this is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even though we'll all make Kemitz Hashem Simchas, and they'll be very similar to the next, how do I outshine my neighbor? The answer is you don't outshine. But I feel like we're all a bunch of robots. You're not robots because you all have hearts, you all have neshamas. You all have that ability to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu through another means, not only from the ability to give and to make a simcha, but you have the ability to serve Hashem in your heart. And you can say, listen, Hashem, this chasana that I'm making, this bar mitzvah that I'm making, this kiddush, this afrof, this donation that I'm making, this davening that I'm doing it for you, Hashem. It's in your heart, and that makes it your own individuality. Once we're talking about the Chanukas HaMishkan, so the Pasuk tells us, if I hear and it was, B'yoyim kalois Moshe l'hokim es HaMishkan. So the Pasuk says, So we were talking about over here the ups and downs of life. So there's a famous letter that Reb Huttner wrote once to Reb Moshe Sher. And Reb Moshe Sher lost a certain bid that he was making. Reb Moshe Sher was very depressed over it. So Reb Huttner explained to him that there's going to be ups and downs of life. You have to anticipate these. But the idea of a Jew is that we keep going. We keep pushing and we keep fighting. If you turn to the end of the parasha, when the Torah describes the final day when the Mishkan is put up. So the Pasuk says, Pasuk Pei Dalet, it says Zois Chanukas HaMizbeach. This is the inauguration of the Mizbeach. This is the final, the conclusion when the Mizbeach is ready, the Mishkan is ready for business. So Rabbi Chana Wasserman, the great Baranovich Rosh Hashiva, who was sadly killed by Ukrainians, actually, believe it or not by the Nazis, by the Ukrainians at that time. But in any case, in 1925, when they made a Chanukas HaBayis to the Baranovich Yeshiva, So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman spoke, and he said that the word Zois is the gematria of three words. It's the gematria of the word of the three words Tzoim, which means to fast, Koil, which means voice, which means to daven, and Momen, which means money. And Rabbi Chanan said that in order for an institution, a Jewish institution, to succeed, it needs three components. It needs obviously money, Momen, but it needs Koil, it needs Tefillah, and you need to daven that this institution, this moise, this shul, this yeshiva should succeed, and you need some, you need to fast over it. Right? We think that all you need to do is to build a shul is money. And of course, you need money. But in order for a shul, a yeshiva, a girl's school, a boy's school, a seminary, a high school, a beis medrash, any mokim kodesh to succeed, said Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, you need three things. And that's the zois. The word zois is a gematria to these three things. You need tons of tefillah. You need to pour out your heart to Hashem that it should succeed. You need to have mammon, of course you need to have money, and you have tzoim, you have to fast. And the Chassam Sofer added, and when Reb Chaim Volozhiner built the famed Volozhiner Yeshiva, which was basically the first yeshiva system amongst Lithuanian yeshivas that all the other yeshivas somewhat copied from, Chaim Volozhiner said it also needs tears. You need to cry. The success of tears. When a person cries over something, that's when you'll see amazing, amazing success. And said the Chassam Sofer, you also need to do it l'shma. The person's building a shul, he's building a school, he's building a yeshiva. He's got to be doing it for the right reasons. If he's doing it for fame and fortune, it's going to fall apart. It's not going to succeed. The Mishkan was built for the right reasons. It was built l'shma. Over and over, when we talked about the Mishkan, we kept on mentioning l'shma, l'shma, l'shma. So says the Chafetz Chaim, if you want a moisid, that organization in Klal Yisrael to succeed, it has to be built l'shma. It has to be built for Hashem. If it's built for your own ego, it's not going to succeed. The Chazon Ish said that anything that's built with dimos, that's built with tears, that will succeed. He says, Az Yimal Yisrael Ushane Birina, Az Yomir, he says, Bedimah Birina Yiktsayru. If it's Bedimah Birina Yiktsayru, then you'll harvest, then you'll see success. In this week's parasha lies the secret to success of any great organization in Klai. So of course you need money. You can't build without money. Baruch Hashem, you look around the Jewish community, in whichever community you find yourself in, there are so many yeshivas and there's so many shuls and Baruch Hashem schools and you know, nurseries for kids to go and learn. It's all fantastic. But how do we get there? How do we build these things? And therefore, the says Rabbi Chanan, the secret lies in this week's parasha. It needs to come with tears. It needs to come with money. It needs to come with crying. It needs to come with fasting. It needs to come with l'shma. All of these need to be there in order for these wonderful moises to be successful. And that's the end of the parasha. Then we'll just share a short thought on Birchas Kohanim. There's so much to talk about in Birchas Kohanim, but I'll share with you just a very short thought, and then we'll get into the Ikar Shir. We'll share with you a thought on Birchas Kohanim. So Birchas Kohanim, we've touched upon before, is an unbelievable opportunity where we regular folk have the opportunity to get a bracha from the Kohanim. But Rashi points out, as does the Pasuk, that the bracha really comes from HaKadosh Baruch. The Kehanim are just the emissaries to give over the bracha. They're the shluchim. But the ultimate bracha is from HaKadosh Baruch, and we have to remind ourselves that. It's not the Kehanim that give us a bracha. The Kehanim don't have any blessing powers. Their powers come from HaKadosh Baruch, and we receive the brachas via them. But if you look in the Pasuk is interesting. It opens up. Hashem says to Moshe, saying, speak to Aaron, ve'el banov lemor, and to his children. Why are there two levels? Why are there two tiers? Speak to Aaron and to his children? It sounds like there's like two different types of groups. There's Aaron, one group, and his sons. What do you mean? Isn't Aaron and his sons one entity? Why are they made like to be two different distinct groups? So the Ksav Sofer explains a very important idea when it comes to Birchas Kehanim. The Ksav Sofer writes that you could think for a second that a kohen can have ulterior motives when he gives a bracha to the Jews. We mentioned earlier that the big bulk of the brachas were very gashmias-based things. So the kohen could say to himself, I want the Jewish people to be wealthy because I want to get their matnas kahuna. The kohen gets various gifts that belong to the Yisrael, but the kohen will only get these gifts if the Yisrael's ground and land produce. So you would think that the kohen has all the reason in the world to give beautiful blessings because he gets a kickback. He gets his presents. Says the Torah, no, that's not the way this is working. The Kohen should not give a bracha to the Jewish people that they should succeed in Parnassah so he can get his his percentage of matnas kuhn from them. The kohen has to think that when he's giving Klai Yisrael a bracha, it is absolutely not about me, the kohen. It's about you, the Jewish people. And how do you know that, says the Ksav Sofer? Because Aaron, when Aaron did the blessing for the Jewish people, Aaron didn't get any kickbacks. Because at this point in the Midbar, there was no kickbacks. There was no ground. There was no land. There were no matnas kuhn for Aaron to get. So when Aaron gave the bracha of Berachos Kohanim, says the Ksav Sofer, he gave it 100% unadulterated lishma. And therefore, the Hashem is saying that just like Aaron, when he gives the brachas, he gives it completely about the people, not about him. So too, I want you, I want the banav. I want you as children. When you'll be living in an agricultural country like Eretz Yisrael, and you'll be giving brachas, and you'll be thinking to yourself, you know what? I want the brachas to come true. I really mean it. I want to see the Jews succeed because I'll get my manas kahuna. Says the Torah, that's not the way this is going to work. When a kohen gives a bracha, it has to come from his heart, from a place of love. Because I want to see my Jewish brethren, my Achenu B'nai Yisrael, succeed. And this is another very important theme in this week's parsha, is not to be selfish, to think about someone else except for ourselves. And it's an ongoing theme in the parsha. We'll try to point it out a couple more times, but it's a very, very important lesson. The lesson is the selflessness of the Jews. We as a Jewish people have to be selfless people, not selfish people. The Kohen cannot be giving brachas thinking, how am I going to benefit from it? He needs to give a bracha in a way that makes him not the main focus over here. And this again fits in very much with our narrative that we just discussed earlier, where this parasha is always read after Shavuos, because I'm sure everyone heard on the second day Shavuos Sefer Rus, and I'm sure you all bothered by the kasha that everyone was bothered with. Beautiful story, so emotional, so up and down, you know, such a fantastic story, but what does that have to do with Shavuos? What does that have to do with Kabbalah Satayr? What does it have to do with Maimon Har Sinai? No connection whatsoever. So the Midrashim asks this kasha, Yaakov Shmoni asks this kasha, and others ask this kasha. And one of the answers is that it's coming to teach us the idea of chesed. Right? The idea, throughout Sefer Rus, there's a underlining theme of selflessness. Right? Rus is completely selfless when it comes to Nami. Boyaz is completely selfless when it comes to Rus. There's a certain act of feeling of doing for others and not being about yourself. And that's, again, that's something that we need to take away from the Yom Tov Shavuos. That we need to walk away from the Yom Tov Shavuos thinking that it's not about me. Yes, I'm very much focused on my growth and my success, but not to the point where I become a selfish person. And therefore, says the Yalkut Shemayni in Parshas, on Yalkut Shemayni writes that the reason why we read Rus is because Rus teaches us that everything is about chesed. And Torah is all about chesed. Torah needs to be about chesed. Torah can't just be about me being selfish and me being self-absorbed. It needs to be about me giving and me doing for others. And there's talk about an amazing medrash in this week's parash where the medrash talks about the fine flour. And the medrash compares Talmidei Chachamim to fine flour. The medrash says that a Talmud Chacham has to know, has to make sure that his Torah is a fine flour, which means he has good Maisim Tovim. Not enough just to sit and learn and to learn a lot of Torah. If it doesn't impact your character, says the Medrash in this week's parasha, there's something missing. That again, right after Shavuos, we get so focused on learning, we forget that there is other elements of Bein Adam L'Chaver that we need to be careful with. Rav Palm says, used to say this story, which is an important lesson. He said that a certain girl was read to a boy, and the boy had a reputation of being a very, very big Talmud Chacham, a very big Lamdan, very big Masmid. And the girl went on a date with the boy and she told her father, I don't know if he's a lamdan or not, but a Baal Midas he's definitely not. And Rav Palm said it bothered him so much to hear that someone who is so great in learning is lacking in his interpersonal skills. He would go on a date and the girl would come back and say he's not a mensch. Then we're missing the point over it. Torah is supposed to make us a better person. And therefore, after the Yom Tov Shavuos, after Kabbalas HaTorah, it's not enough that we're going to learn more Torah. And we know more Torah. We have to make sure, says the Medrash, that our Maisim are clear. And that's really the idea over here of the Kehanim. The Kehanim are not about themselves. They are very selfless. They are the example of we need to be like. We need to be like them. We need to make it not about us. We need to think about others. We need to be good, kind, caring people to others as well. And then we come, I'm not going to go completely backwards because I still want to get to the beginning of the parsha. And then we'll go a little bit back to the beginning of the parsha. We'll go now a little bit, we're half an hour in. Let's just, you know what, let's continue going backwards a little bit longer just to confuse people. The next parsha that the Torah discusses is the famous parsha of Nazir. The Torah gives us a parsha of Nazir, where a man or a woman, Rabbi said, Naziris is not gender-based. The Torah accepts Naziris from either a man or a woman, and another is limited in what they can do. They're not allowed to drink wine. They're not allowed to grow. They're not allowed to cut their hair. They have a limitation. So there's a famous Sephorna. We quote it almost every year. And I want to quote it again this year, where the Sephorna says that the Lashon of Yafli. Is it a Sephorna? I want to make sure I get it right. But what's the Lashon of Yafli? It says the Pasuk, Ki Yafli Lindor Ned Denozer LaHashem. So I believe it's the Sephorna. Of course, now I can't find it. He says that the Lashon Yafli, maybe it's a Chizkuni. The Lashon Yafli comes from the Lashon of Apella. It's an amazement. Ah, it's Ibn Ezra. Says the Ibn Ezra, Yafrish Ayasid Dover Pella. I mean, this Nazir is going against the tide. The rest of the world is indulging in Tanugi Ayil Mazeh. The rest of the world is finding more pleasures, more ways of satisfying their physical needs. And this Nazir is saying, going the opposite direction. He's saying, the physical pleasures of this world, which Hashem allowed me to have, I'm not even going to enjoy. Therefore, says the Ibn Ezra, such a person is a Pella. He's in amazement. Now, whether or not Naziris is the right or wrong path in life, I think this is an important lesson for all of us. We are living in a world where everyone is looking on more physical pleasure. We are living in a society where it's all about physical indulging and physical pleasure. How much more physical pleasure can I get? And again, it seeps into our world as well. And it seeps into our world in a very kosher way. You know, how many cheesecakes can I get at the Kiddush on Shul? So I was just talking to someone the other day. Today he was telling me how many cheesecakes his shul that he was at served for the Kiddush on Shul. You know, this has became our sign of a good Kiddush, that the shul gave so many cheesecakes. So, good, cheesecake is geshmak. I like cheesecake. I don't like cheesecake. People like cheesecake. But we're running into this wall of indulging in physical pleasures. So this Nazir decides, you know what? No, I'm not giving in. I'm not going to go for it. I'm going to fight the tide. And when a person fights the tide, he's taka apella. It's a pella. We as the Jewish nation are fighting the tide. We're living in a world that is so empty and void of religion. Look around the world today. Religion is becoming so obsolete and almost outdated. You look down upon if you believe in a God and if you have a religious standard. So we are all living a stickle nazirist in these days. We're fighting to show the world that we're not giving in to this new idea that religion is wrong and do as you feel and be what you want and pick the gender that you want to be. No. We're going against the tide. And it's a pella. It's not easy. And we have to be proud of what we're fighting over here, that we're going against the tide to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when it comes to the Nazir, we know that the Torah tells us that the Gemara tells us what makes a Nazir become a Nazir. So we all know the parasha before this, which we're going out of order, of course, tells us about that if anyone were to see a woman and in a Saita, he would automatically want to become a Nazir. Why? Because he saw what alcohol can do. So he would run and become a Nazir. So the obvious kasha is if he saw the terror of what wine can cause to a woman, so why does he have to become a Nazir? Let him just be scared stiff from watching the sight to explode. Right? If anyone's ever watched something which is scary, they don't need to then go and prevent themselves from doing something which is scary because they saw it themselves. So the answer before Shem give is that no, it's actually not true. Scientifically speaking, when a person sees an Aveira, he becomes desensitized. It's not that he becomes so amazed by it, he now becomes actually desensitized to it. He now saw, look what wine does, it causes a lady to become a Saita. I now become a little bit desensitized to the impacts of Saita, or a woman having an illicit relationship. And therefore he bedavka has to go and set standards and barriers to prevent himself from getting himself into trouble. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky makes a fantastic observation. When the Torah describes the Nazir, so the Nazir is slightly different than the Kohen. The Kohen is allowed to become Tomei to his immediate relatives, while the Nazir is not. And the Torah writes that he's not allowed to become Tomei to his father, his mother, his brother, his sister. He's not allowed to become Tomei to him. Asks Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, why no mention of wife and children? What happened to the wife and children? So Yaakov Kamenetsky explains, he says, because your average Nazir does it during his early years. Usually a Nazir is someone who wants to change himself. He wants to go against the tide, like we mentioned. He said it's very hard to do that when you're married with children. You're already set in your ways. You have your lifestyle. It's very hard to change once you already have a family and you're settled down. But a single guy who's looking and searching, he will have much easier opportunity to find himself. That's why many organizations focus predominantly on the care of college children, boys and girls, college students, because the college students are at a point where they can go either way. They haven't decided their future yet. They haven't made up their mind. But take a guy who's 45 years old, settled down with a wife and two kids and a white picket fence, and he has a job, and you tell him, no, I want you to become religious. I want you to kasher your whole kitchen. Much, much more difficult. The Eva says, Yaakov, that's what the Torah is telling us. The Torah is pointing out that the success rate of a nazir or becoming a nazir is predominantly for someone who's single, someone who does not have a wife, doesn't have children, but he has parents, and nonetheless, he's not allowed to become metamet to his parents. However, points out the Sfasemes, why Taka is a Kohen allowed to become a Tamit to his relatives, but a Nazir not? And he says something very, very, very important. He says because a Kohen's Kedusha comes from his family. The reason why a Kohen is a Kohen is because his father was a Kohen. He has Kedusha from the family. So that Kedusha from the family is where he got his power, and that requires him to become a Tamit to his family. As opposed to a Nazir is a self-made person. So a self-made person, he doesn't have that connection to the family. Therefore, he's not permitted to become Tamei to the family. And that was a difficult Rashi. Rashi says that the Kohen, the Nazir, has to bring a Korban Chatos when he finishes his Naziris. So the obvious question is, what Avera did he do? He didn't do an Avera. What did he do wrong? He became a Nazir, he fulfilled his Naziris. What Avera did he do? So Mepharshim explained, the Avera that he did was that he was on such a high level. Meaning, maybe me and you don't have to reach such a high level, but once he took that first step, and for 30 days he was sober, for 30 days he was not drinking wine, for 30 days he was higher than me and you, and then he dipped back down. You shouldn't have done that. Because you showed us that you can do it. You show that you can be on such a high level. Now that you're going to go back to regular life, although there might not be anything wrong with regular life, but you were on a higher level and you showed that you can succeed on that level. You were able to manage on that level. And therefore, when you dip back down to regular folk, to regular life, you need to bring a carbon for that. That is the parasha of Soita, that's the parasha of Nazir. We come to the parasha before that, this is the parasha of Soita. Very, very complicated story over here, the parasha of Soita, where a woman is suspected of having an affair, having an illicit relationship. Her husband suspects her for good reason. He has what's called kinah v'nistera. He warned her, don't be alone with this guy. And he caught them alone. Again, no evidence that they did anything wrong. He just suspects that she might have done something wrong. So the Torah has this whole process where we bring her into Bezdin and she drinks a special liquid. It's called Mei Soita. And if she is guilty, she will implode. She will explode in front of her eyes. She can only imagine what that looks like. However, says the Gemara, as she quotes it, if she's innocent, she will get the most beautiful of brachas that you can ask for. She'll have an easy time having children. If she had a hard time having children, if her children didn't come out the way she wanted the first time, it'll be better this time. She gets beautiful, beautiful brachas. That's the whole parasha of Soita summed up in a few words. But there are some glaring questions that you need to ask from what we just mentioned in such a few words. First of all, why did she get these beautiful brachas if she's not guilty? You know, she's still not exactly, you know, Beis Yaakov Girl of the Year Award. Think about it. Her husband said, stop being alone with this guy. She told her husband, fly a kite, I'm doing what I want. And she was alone with this man. So she's not exactly living the perfect lifestyle. So why did she get this? Oh, because she wasn't Mizana. Oh, she wasn't Mizana. All of a sudden now we give her beautiful brachas. So this is a very strong question. And there are many answers that are given. But one answer that I happen to like a lot is that, you know, think about it from this girl's perspective. This girl's obviously having a very troubled marriage. She's not happy in her marriage. And she has a guy that's showing an interest in her. And they're being alone. She could have easily lived with this man. She could have easily did a very big aveir. But she didn't. She decided that she's not. So yes, she shouldn't have put herself in that dilemma in the first place. But at the end of the day, we're giving her credit that she didn't drop to the lowest point. It's still a big deal. You know what? She hit rock bottom. She's emotionally deprived. She wants attention of a man, and a man's giving her attention. And if she's willing to live with this man physically, I guarantee you the man will do it also. But she says, no, I'm not doing it. Why did she say no? She could have said yes. Would anyone have blamed her? No, her husband's a jerk. He's a selfish husband. He's not a good husband. He's never around. He's never available. He's not there for her. But she, even though all that backdrop, even though perhaps all that, what we would look at almost permission to do that, she said, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not giving in. Never says the Torah, that's a big deal. She could have, and she didn't sin. Yes, she set herself up for that, but at the end of the day, because she didn't sin, the Torah rewards her with fantastic, fantastic brachas. There's an important line over here in Rashi. Rashi says about the Saita, Rashi tells us, Rashi says, where'd it go? Let me find it. This is what happens when I go out of order, throws out my whole order. Rashi has an interesting line over here. Rashi says that the problem is that she went, right, Rashi says by her carbon that she brings, she doesn't put any shemen on the carbon. And Rashi says she doesn't bring shemen, because Rashi says over here, can't find it, right, Rashi says, because v'hi parsha midakehen, she's not allowed to put any levoina. She imois nikras levoina. Our imois are called levoina, and therefore she went away from the paths of our imois. Our imois, the great Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, they're called levoina. And because this woman didn't follow in their ways, she is now not allowed to have levoina on the carpet. So many mepharshim ask, you know, she didn't go in the ways of the imois. She's far, far away from our imois. It's not even close to Ari Mois. You know, this is her problem, that she's not being like Sari Menu. The problem is she's having an affair. So the Mefarshim point out over here is Reb Hanachlibus explains it like this, that her mistake was she stopped striving to be like the Imois. Listen, we're never going to be Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We need to strive for something. We need to have something, that a goal that I want to be like them. Will I ever get to them? Probably not. Almost likely not. But I'm still trying. I have a she'ifa. I have a drive. I have a desire to be like them one day. And that was the mistake, says Rabbi Nachlibowitz, that this Isha Saita, she totally checked herself out. She no longer was even trying to reach the madrega of one of our imois. She checked out of the game. She gave up. She wasn't even striving anymore. The moment you stop striving to be great, you lose everything. I saw a great quote from the famous Napoleon. He said, every soldier should strive to be a general. And any soldier who doesn't strive to be a general is not even a soldier. And it means in life, we need to have she'ifas. We need to have goals. We need to have desires and drive. The moment we give up, we lose the game. And that's the famous Memra Chazal, Maisa Yegia, Maisa Avoisela, Maisa Maisa Avoisela. When will my actions equal the actions of our forefathers? Now, is it ever possible for a human being today, Tavshin Pei Beis, to reach the level of Avam Yitzchak and Yaakov? Is it possible for one of us to be able to be like the others? No. But we have to strive. And that's why I like to tell stories to my Talmidim of Gedolim. And some of these stories we say, it's not shaykh to me. You're right, it's not shaykh to me, it's not shaykh to you. But at least I'm striving. I know what I would like to be like. Will I get there? I don't know. But I know what I'm shooting for. I know I'm shooting for the stars, because I know that there are superstars that lived in our world that did things. And that's why I think it's kedai to tell over stories, maislach, of gedolim, even though there's no way I can be like that gadol. But daf and vissim, we need to know, what am I striving for? We don't want to walk around thinking that my life is the epitome of Judaism. My learning is the epitome of learning. And I met people who think that what they do is the epitome of the best. Because they don't know there's a bigger world out there. They don't know they're a Gedolim that learned 20 hours a day. And they don't know they're a Gedolim who did unbelievable things. They think, this is it. Boom, shut, finished. That's the ceiling of life. And it's a mistake. Whether or not we will eventually ever get to their madrigas, I don't know. But we need to strive. We need to shoot. And therefore, says Reb Hanachlibowitz, was the mistake that this woman made, well, she stopped trying to be like one of the Imois. She stopped trying to shoot for the stars. She gave up. She said, I'm done. I'm checking out. I'm hanging out with this guy. And that is the beginning of the end. When you stop trying, you stop working at getting to a certain conclusion. But the story with the Saita is a little bit more complex. Because Rashi tells us that how does a lady become a Saita? How does a lady become a Saita? So Rashi says, because the next parasha before this, this is what happens when we go out of order, we throw this off a little bit, is that the Torah is talking about that the karbonis, the gifts that were supposed to give to the Kohen. And the Torah tells us that if you're not going to give the gifts to the Kohen, you're going to be a cheapskate, you're going to be stingy, you're not going to give it to the Kohen. You know what's going to happen? You're eventually going to need to come to the Kohen anyways. Why are you going to have to come to the Kohen? You're going to have to come to the Kohen because the Kohen is going to need to do the Saita process. So the obvious kashi is, because I'm a cheapskate, my wife is going to end up looking for something out of the relationship. What does one have to do with the other? How can my being cheap and not wanting to share my money with the Kohen is going to cause me that my wife is now going to become a Saita? So there are, again, many terutzim for this kasha. I like to suggest an answer that I've suggested in the past. I think it's very true. What causes a woman to stray? Let's be honest. She's not getting what she needs from her husband. Why? Because this husband is a very selfish person. How do I know he's selfish? Because he doesn't want to share with the Kohen. Because he thinks to himself that the money that I make is all my money, and why should I give it to the Kohen? What does he do for me? Why? Because he's Shevet Levi, because he doesn't work, and I'm supposed to support him? Nah, me. I work, I keep the money. Very selfish attitude. Generally speaking, selfish people don't make very good husbands. Because when you're selfish, you're very self-absorbed. You think you're going to be able to be there for your wife if you're so self-absorbed? So therefore, Zohar tells you that same selfish attitude of it's all about me and my money and I'm not sharing makes you a lousy husband. Lousy husbands create saitas. Again, not that it's a permission for a wife to cheat if her husband's a lousy husband. Chas v'shalom, we're not saying that. But it's just it's the logical conclusion. Because this husband is selfish and self-absorbed, that's going to lead his wife to be looking for happiness somewhere else. It's just simple like that. Because if she's not getting her emotional needs met from her husband, she's going to look somewhere else for it. So therefore, Zohar tells you, if you're going to be selfish, you're going to be self-absorbed, you're not going to be a good person, you're not going to be a good spouse either. If you're not going to be a good spouse, then your wife is going to have to look for other things. There's another answer the Mefarshim give, which I think is very much what we've been discussing so far this evening, is that if a husband is not giving the way he's supposed to, it's a certain tone set in the home. There's a certain tone in the home. The tone in the home is that we don't have to do what we're supposed to do. We do what we want, what feels good. It doesn't feel good to me to give to the Kohen, I'm not going to give to the Kohen. We're living Yiddishkeit, whatever feels good. The moment you're living your home and the attitude in your home is do what feels good, so then the lady says to herself, it feels good to flirt and to schmooze with another man. It feels good. If the attitude in the home is do what feels good and not what is right, then you have a total breakdown in everything. So when the husband goes around telling the family, we're not giving the money to the Kohen, the Torah says, I don't care what the Torah says, I want to do what I want to do. What feels good to me, what feels right to me. That is a very, very big recipe for disaster. That is poor chinuch in a home. Yiddishkeit is not about what feels good to me. Yiddishkeit is about what Hashem wants. Yiddishkeit is not what makes me happy. Yiddishkeit is what makes Hashem happy. And if Hashem says, give away your money to the Kohen, that's what I want to do. And therefore, the moment the tone in the home is, do what feels good, so then the lady says to herself, great. You know what? It feels very geschmack to get attention from another man other than my spouse. So I'm going to go do it. So therefore, it's a total breakdown in the chinuch of the home. When you have a breakdown like that in the chinuch of the home, then it's going to be a disaster. Rav Hanoch Leibowitz explains that there's a connection between a person who's not... There's really two parshias. Before we get to the story of the Saita, there's the parsha of stealing, and then there's the parsha of not giving your presents to the Kohen, and then there's the story of the Saita. So Rav Hanoch explained that there's a common denominator between these three things. Is when a person is not happy bin Adam l'chaveroi, and he's not happy with his wife, it all comes together. When a person has happiness with his family, he's happy with his wife, he'll be able to deal with people better. He's not going to be so rough around the edges with people. But when a person is not happy in his marriage, he's miserable, can't get along with his wife, he's going to take it out on his neighbor, on his partner at work, takes it out with the guy on the street. It's all connected to each other. The shalom bias that happens, says Reb Hanoch, is connected to the way he acts with other people as well. And I'm sure you all have seen this in your own life. You must have come across people that you notice that are just so difficult to deal with. Do you think they make good husbands? No. If you can't deal with them and no one else around you can deal with them, you think their wife can deal with them? I remember I once had to deal with someone. Very difficult person to deal with. And I said, I don't know how his wife lives with him. He's impossible to deal with. Now, the answer is she probably also struggles with it. Because if you can't get along with people, you can't get along with your wife. Now, I'm not saying that always are those two things completely synonymous. Sometimes you can have a rift with your wife, but you can get along with the neighbor. But if you're not happy, the happiness of the home spills over very often into the rest of your life. If you're happy at home, you'll be happy in other places as well. And if you're a difficult person on the street, you're not going to be that much easier for your wife to deal with. So if the Torah lumps these three different parshiyos together. And it's important, and Reb Henech tells over, that it's important to get along and to show that mutual respect that you're supposed to have to your wife. Tells over the famous story with the Chavetz Chaim and Meir Shapiro. When Meir Shapiro wanted to open up his Lublin yeshiva, so he wasn't the first yeshiva to open. He was opening more of a Chassidish yeshiva for boys. And he wanted to see how the other Lithuanian yeshivas function. So at that time, he was checking out all the other yeshivas, and he found himself in Radin for Shabbos. And he sent word to the Chafetz Chaim that he wanted very much to be a guest by the Chafetz Chaim for Suda Shabbos. Chafetz Chaim invited him for the Suda. But it came out that Rami Shapiro has a chumrah. He doesn't eat meals together with women. So he told the Chavetz Chaim, "I can only come if it's a separate seating, men and women." The Chavetz Chaim said to Rami Shapiro, "I'm sorry, I can't invite you because I want my wife at the Shabbos table with me, and you can't come to that meal. So I'm sorry, I can't invite you to the meal." Chavetz Chaim had such admiration and respect. We said all these stories before. I'm not going to get into it now because it's late already. How the Chavetz Chaim had such admiration and respect for his wife. He viewed her in such a valuable way that he said to Meir Shapiro, I would love to do Achnas Zarchim, invite you for a Shabbos meal. Have a godel like you at my table, but I'm not going to throw my wife out for it. I'm not going to throw her under the bus because you have Akbodah. Certain sensitivity, a certain chashivas, a certain beauty, and a certain respect that he showed. Okay, now we're getting towards the beginning of the parasha almost. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Torah tells us that a person has to give away his gifts to the Kohanim. And the pasuk says, "V'chol truma l'chol kotshe b'nei Yisrael she'akuv l'kohen liyeh." You have to give it to the Kohen. "V'ish es kadosho v'lo yiyeh lo yiyu ish es she'yitin l'kohen lo yiyeh." So this is a great pasuk. It's a beautiful pasuk from the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim explains this pasuk such a profound way. Very often in life, people think they own things. People think it's theirs. I bought it. I bought a house. I bought a car. I bought objects. They're mine. The Torah says nothing is really yours. Nothing is really yours. The only thing that's really yours is those things of spirituality. Zok the Torah, the ish es kadosh of lo yiyu. Isha sheyitin lakoyin. That you give away to the koyin, lo yet, that's really yours. The only thing you really own in this world is not the car and the house that you bought. The only thing you really own is the money that you give away. The money that you give to the koyin. The money that you give to Maisa. The money that you give to Tztaka. The money that you give to build a shul. That's the only thing you really own. Because everything else is meaningless. Everything else is here one day, gone the next. One of the lessons that we learned from COVID was so many people were extremely wealthy one day, broke the next day. So many people that were broke before COVID became wealthy after COVID. Money comes and money goes. Nothing lasts. There's only one thing, says the Chavetz Chaim, that lasts. Ish es sheyitin lakoyin, that you give away to the koyin, lo yiyeh, that will be forever. That they could take to the bank. The money you can't take to the bank. It's gone one day. But the money that you give away to tzedakah, the money that you give to good need, to good causes, worthy need, to worthy place, lo yiyeh, that's the one thing you'll have. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that's what you'll hold on to for nitzchis. Now you can take to the next world. The car, the house, can't take that to the next world. The only thing you can take to the next world is that you gave away in a halachic ramification. Then right before that, the Torah teaches us a very difficult parsha. The Torah teaches us a parsha of stealing from a ger. Person steals from a ger, and now the ger dies, and he has no family. So how do you return the gzela? So the Torah has a whole process of what do you do with the gzela. So here there's a very famous sforno. I think this time it's a sforno. Where the sforno writes that when a person steals from a ger, it's not just stealing. It's a terrible, terrible chilul Hashem. Why is it a chilul Hashem? Because think about this ger. Right, ger means he was a guy, he lived the outside world, and he was inspired by Judaism, and he wants to become Jewish, because he thinks the Jewish people are better, we're the chosen people, we're a kav above the rest of the world. And you know what happens? A Jew rips him off! Can you imagine the terrible chilul Hashem that produces? The ger thinks to himself, Jews are better, they're not like that. and he finds himself being ripped off, being stolen from another, from a Jew, it creates a terrible, terrible chilul Hashem. And therefore, the Torah says that when a person steals from a ger, he's ma'al b'Hashem. He does mi'ila, because he makes a terrible chilul Hashem. Because now the ger says to himself, this is the nation I strive to be part of. This was the nation I wanted to join. These people, terrible. And Mefarshim point out that if you look at the lashon of the pasuk says, "Isha yisha kiyas mikol chatas adam lemol ma'al b'Hashem." What's the lashon mikol chatas adam? Why does the Torah use the word adam? So there's a taisvis. Taisvis says adam refers to goyim. The pasuk reads like this: stealing is not a Jewish thing. When you drop down to stealing, you're acting like an adam. You're acting like a goy. Stealing is not a Jewish concept. The problem is, unfortunately, in our community, stealing has become accepted. Someone was just telling me the other day about a certain terrible Ponzi scheme. 60 people were affected out of this Ponzi scheme. Millions and millions of dollars lost by a frum guy. Frum guy. A Ponzi scheme. Now, did he do it on purpose? I don't know the details. But when I heard that, I was so depressed. We're supposed to be better than that. We're not supposed to be doing Ponzi schemes. We're not supposed to be ripping off each other. And this fellow told me, who lost a significant amount of money, he said, we all trusted him. We trust each other. We, from Yidden, always trust each other. And now all of a sudden we said, I can't trust a Yid. I can't do business with a Yid. He may rip me off. That's a chilul Hashem. We're supposed to be better than that. Gneva is for the Adam. It's for the Goyim. You don't trust a guy, he's going to rip you off. But from a Yid, guy wears tzitzis and tefillin and goes to shul and says, kid to yeshiva, I can't trust him. So this mamash broke my heart when I heard this story. Besides for all the money that Yidden have lost, which is also heart-wrenching. But we have to be better than that. We can't be like the Goyim. We can't drop and lower ourselves to them. And that's what the Torah is reminding us, that this type of avir of stealing, that's for the Adam, that's for the Goyim. We Yidden have to be better than that. We have to be a notch above that, that we don't allow gzela into our home. And Moshe Feinstein explained that gzela is not a ben adam l'chaver aver. Most of us look at gzela as I hurt the guy I stole from. Says Rav Moshe, that's not the pshat. Why, says Rav Moshe? Because if that would be true, if you'd steal a dollar from a millionaire, you didn't hurt him. You didn't dent him. So Dr. Moshe, gneiv is not what you stole from that guy. Gneiv is your lack of emunah b'Hashem. Why are you stealing? Because you need money? And you don't think Hashem knows that you need money? You don't think Hashem can provide you money if he felt you need the money? The answer is Hashem says you don't need the money, but you think you need the money. Says Rav Moshe, every gneiva is rooted in your lack of emunah b'Hashem. That's really where it is. It's not so much that you have a taivas mammon. It's really rooted in your lack of emunah b'Hashem, explains Rav Moshe Feinstein. That's the mistake that we have when we steal. It's not coming because I have a significant desire for money. Yeah, we all want money. But it's more than that. It's coming from a place where you don't have your emunah straight. You don't believe that Kadosh Baruch Hu can give you that that you ultimately need. Okay. I don't think we even got to the beginning of the parasha. But I think we'll leave it at that. That the takeaway from this week's parasha is to give the money where it's supposed to go. But more than that, Rabbi says, when you give away your money, do it with a simcha. You know, sometimes you're not so happy to give away your meiser money, and you're not so happy to give out tzedakah. But when a person gives it, and he shows his family, he shows his children, his grandchildren, look what I'm doing. I'm happy. It's a freedom. It's not my money. It's Hakadosh Baruch Hu's money. He wants me to give it away. It creates a different atmosphere in the home. It creates a seviva in the home of understanding where money is, what money is about, how to react to money, how to treat money, how to value money. And that, as Reb Shimon Shkup explains famously, that when Hashem sees that we know how to handle money properly, he gives us more money. When he sees we know how to use money, he gives us more. When he sees we don't waste it, we don't blow it, we don't buy things that we don't need, and we don't just try to outdo the other guy, and we don't just steal it, but we use our money wisely, Hashem says that you can handle it, I'll give you more. Therefore, Met Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should see how we use our money rightly and properly. He should send us all a lot for ourselves, for our family. He should give us mamun, Ashiris beravchus, as long as we're using it in the proper way. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful Shabbos and have a good evening.